I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The rivalry, Juan Soto, all of that to talk about it. The state of New York baseball. We bring in Dave Lennon from Newsday. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Hey, Laurie, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well. I'm excited. I'm about this Subway Series. And question for you, you obviously have been covering both teams, Mets and Yankees, for a long time now, and the Subway Series. If I said to you on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being low, 10 being the highest, how much juice does this version of the Subway Series have right now?
I mean, I think it's got to be pretty close to 10. I mean, with the Soto subplot alone is enough to make it an 8. And without even adding on the first place teams, the money spent, you know, where do each of these teams, you know, rate in relation to each other now, you know. So I think this is really, it couldn't be any bigger for where we are in the season. I mean, we're talking about, you know, mid to late May, and this is not a time where you consider the games to be very big at this stage. We're still relatively early in the season. But for this point, for this month and where we are, you know, approaching 50 games in on the year by the time that these two teams meet, yeah, I don't think really the stakes could be any bigger as far as the fan bases and what these teams want to see how they match up with each other.
Other thing that I often find adds interest in a rivalry is when teams have a little bit different approaches to their, you know, construction or how they're going about stuff. And when you look at the Yankees and that, they've been the best offensive team in baseball and highest OPS and just bludgeoning teams offensively, led by Aaron Judge, who may be the best right-handed hitter of all time.
And I was gonna say there's a big reason why they're so high up on that list, and he's a big reason why.
Right, and then you have the Mets, where you know, and the Yankees, of course, went out and spent on the, you know, a high end free agent pitcher who is giving them more than they could have hoped in Max Fried, is pitching right, like a Cy Young, but the, you know, expensive high-end pitching long-term contract. And then you have the Mets with the David Stern approach to projects and gambles and, you know, and tonnage and a lot of different options of pitching.
Right.
And yet the Yankees might have the highest OPS and be the best offense in all of baseball, led by Judge. But the flip side is the Mets have the, as a pitching staff, the lowest ERA in, you know, in all of baseball, and their starting rotation is the best ERA in all of baseball. Contrasts I always find interesting. Like, something's got to give with this Subway Series, Mets pitching versus Yankees hitting.
Yeah, you know, I'd characterize it like that if maybe we were talking about a week or two ago, Lori. But I don't know if you noticed, but coming out on the outside rail right now is a pretty good Mets offense.
Yeah.
You know, they're starting to climb
third in offensive OPS,
right? So, yeah. I think the Dodgers are maybe number two.
Yeah,
right now
they are.
This is an offensive team that's gradually getting a lot better, and Juan Soto still isn't Juan Soto yet. He's getting better. You know, we've seen a couple two homer games from him. You know, he's back in the 800s now for his OPS. He's hitting about 255. So he's getting there, but he's still not what people kind of envisioned. So we haven't really seen the top three guys. Two of them have, but all three haven't really been firing all at the same time. That's going to become a very dangerous lineup when that does come. So I don't think we'll be talking quite as much as the Mets about a pitching-centric team I think the lineup is going to be a lot more of a factor going forward for them. But certainly the approaches of these two teams and the performances the Mets are getting out of a starting rotation that really, I did the Dodgers not too long ago. I think their entire rotation, at least the part that's active right now, I think only adds up to about $40 million for the guys that are pitching right now. That's for the whole rotation. So, I mean, that's less than what Jacob deGrom is making in his salary this year. So it's really kind of done relatively on the cheap. And I think what the Mets have done is they've really identified guys that will fit their system, will fit the kind of the blend of the analytics and the coaching that they've established, and guys that will thrive here. And that's what we've seen. I mean, the Griffin Cannings, and I mean, Clay Holmes is 5-1 with a 2.5 ERA as a starter. He wouldn't have even imagined himself being able to do that when he entered this offseason. So I think what the Mets are doing is, I'm not going to say unusual, because they've been trending in this direction since last year, but I don't think this is something that any team can just say, hey, you know what, we're just going to go with a lower cost rotation and just bring in a ton of guys and do what the Mets did. I don't think it's that easy. I think you have to be pretty smart to do it. I think you have to spend a lot of money in the infrastructure to do it, which Steve Cohen has done. So this isn't just kind of a fly-by-night thing. They've been building towards this, and I think they've established a pretty good system now, a year and a half into the David Stearns era, on how to identify the right arms and how to build a rotation that can be efficient, not only stat-wise, but financially too.
Yeah, you mentioned $40 million. That was what they were paying Max Scherzer. So you can have...
Right, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
When they had Scherzer, you can have one Scherzer, or you can have, as you said, five of the current guys who are in the starting rotation and give yourself a lot more options. And even if a couple of them at some point regress to the mean, well, then you have Sean Manaea and Frankie Montas and Paul Blackburn at some point coming back. And then, you know, as you said, with the model the Mets have set up, then there are the ones that are in the minors, and whether right. that's Sproat, McLean, Tong, Tidwell, that there are a number of young arms that also could come and supplement this. There's a lot of tonnage that it seems they're going, there's quality, but it's a lot of volume of options.
I mean, I've talked to Stearns about this, you know, before the season and even after that, just because there was such a perception that the Mets were so anti going out and spending for Corbin Burns or a Max Fried, you know, just using their dollars for that. And it's not that they're just dead set against it. Just that they'd so much rather develop their own Corbin Burns and their own Max Frieds in the system, just because then they know where the guy is coming from. You know, they've developed him in their system. They know how he picks. You know, they know what makes him good. It's not a risk when you're spending that kind of money. Now, you can't always do that. You have to get the draft picks or make the international signings that enable you to do that. But I think that's where this organization is comfortable with doing, you know, obviously signing Soto for the huge contract they did. They wanted to save some money in some other areas, but it's good that Cohen has found a guy in Stearns who really likes the challenge of identifying these type of pitchers and doing this, because not a lot of GMs might have the patience to do that, especially in a place like New York.
Talking to David Lennon about the Mets, the Yankees, the Subway Series, and so we've been talking about the pitching. The other thing that David Stearns seemed to feel pretty strongly about is giving some of the young position players as well an opportunity. One of the controversial decisions of the offseason, very popular, Jose Iglesias and the Mets, OMG, don't bring him back, and instead decide to give some of the young players an opportunity. We're seeing now with, you know, Brett Beatty is back, and, you know, small sample size with three home runs over the last few days. Mark Vientos, who hit a home run, an RBI single today. Acuna, who, you know, we'll see what happens, and can he adjust and maintain offensively, defense and speed. We've seen he was player rookie of the month in April. when you see whether it's Ronnie Mauricio and all of this, this is also something, I mean, if you're a Mets fan and you want to dream on something and the upside you talked about potentially of this offense, yes, it's Pete Alonso and it's Francisco Lindor and it's Juan Soto. But in terms of the depth of the lineup and the contribution also, what are you seeing from some of the young players?
Well, I mean, with rookies and with young players, the biggest challenge for them is always consistency. Mm-hmm. You know, Vientos, obviously, you know, really kind of crashed the party last year and became the second half story. And arguably the Yankees, I mean, the Mets' best hitter for the last part of the season and even into the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, certainly one of the most dangerous guys. Then he comes back this year and he's not kind of the same swaggy V, right? You know, the confidence isn't quite there. He's kind of feeling, you know, I think he's feeling a little bit of the pressure, which is natural, you know, for what he did last year. So it's been a little bit of a struggle for him to get back to that. I find it interesting, you know, that he comes back today and has a big game. Now that you start to see Brett Beatty get back on the picture with a couple big games, and all of a sudden, that has a tendency maybe to get you to lock in a little bit more, right? You know, you see the other third baseman show up and start to rake like Beatty has the past couple of days, and it's not just the home runs for Beatty. I think what you've seen from him the past couple of days, and I was talking to a couple of Mets people about it today. You're seeing the opposite field power, you know, the home run he hit the other night. When he starts doing that, they think he's in a much better place. What he's been doing is he's been focusing on getting a lot more game quality type of reps in the cage to really kind of ratchet up the intensity instead of just, you know, taking BP and doing what they do. Just really kind of make it more of a game rep type experience for him. And I think also the fact that he, you know, once you get sent down to the minors after you have kind of a disappointing start to the year, it's like the worst thing has happened, right? That's what you were worrying about. You were spending all this time worrying about staying in the majors. Okay, it happened. You wound up down there. Then you get back again. It's kind of like you came out the other side, you know? Mm-hmm. Maybe it loosens you up a little. You know, maybe you don't feel quite as much in your own head. We've seen that with Beatty. You know, he tends to put too much pressure on himself. Maybe being down there, coming back up, having a couple big games, maybe something clicks for him. And I think where that could help, if you have both Beatty and Vientos starting to hit, you know, now you have maybe a DH that you can put in there with Winker on the shelf now. So some of these pieces coming around, you know, Alvarez, you know, being back in the mix now. I think this is going to lengthen their lineup. And again, just kind of make this lineup become more of the dangerous lineup we thought it would be when they came out of spring training.
Yeah, especially with you look across to the opposing dugout or into center field, and there's Pete Crow Armstrong, the former Met prospect that was traded away for a rental in Javi Baez, Trevor Williams. It feels like a lifetime ago philosophically versus where David Stearns is, that trade away a top prospect for a rental.
I mean, could you imagine if they had Pete Crow Armstrong in center field right now too? I mean, what kind of young team they would have here? But yeah, I mean, there were mistakes of the previous administrations, and you know, I wrote a column about it in today's paper just about kind of revisiting it, because I think it's easy for people to just make kind of a snap judgment now and say, man, the Mets really screwed up. You know, what are they doing for a rental, you know, to blow a great talent like that, sending him to the Cubs? But I think what people forget is that 2021 Mets team, as I wrote, they were in first place for over 100 days of that season. When they made the trade, they were in first place by 3.5 games. Lindor was on the DL. And we know the pressures that exist with the Mets to try to make a splash at the deadline, especially when they look like they have a chance at winning the division. So there was a lot of different kind of – there was a different dynamic there. Steve Cohen's first season as owner of the team. So that team was under a lot of pressure at that point to kind of do some things to stay in the race. Obviously, it all unraveled. DeGrom was shut down, didn't make another start. you know, for that season. So that obviously hurt a lot. So it wasn't as easy as just making a terrible Tom Seaver trade and just cursing the organization, you know, for the next few decades. This was a trade that was felt that was done out of necessity, but still they are burned by it when you see Crow Armstrong turn into the type of player that he has been so far for the Cubs, for sure.
As we look at the Yankees, and I know you were covering the Mets today, but you certainly know from last season, Luis Severino famously saying of the the Yankees lineup last year, he said basically there were two guys, and then he wasn't really worried about anybody else on that team. And face them today, and it didn't quite go that well. Admittedly, it's pitching out there in Sacramento, especially on a day when it's windy, is a bit of a challenge. But four innings, and I mean, he didn't walk off the mound giving up eight runs, but ultimately it was eight earned runs. This Yankee lineup and what Judge is doing, and yes, of course, a lot of it is Judge, but a Ben Rice who hits a grand slam home run today, Paul Goldschmidt being what, you know, there were questions, what version would they get? Jason Dominguez starting to come into his own. This Yankee lineup, how frightening and formidable is this coming into the Subway Series?
I mean, Dominguez is such a huge key here to lengthening that lineup. And what he can do as a switch hitter.
Mm-hmm.
You've been waiting for him to kind of, you know, to break through and really become, you know, the quote unquote Martian that everybody has billed him as. And we hadn't really seen it until, of course, Friday's game where he went crazy with the three home runs and really kind of became kind of the electric hitter that people kind of anticipated they would see. And not just being a consistent hitter with home runs, but being a guy, a real game changer, kind of a game wrecker, which is how you would think. I mean, he's got speed, you know, he's got gap-to-gap power. He's starting to hit better from the right side, which is a key for him. So I think that's the guy they're really looking at. I mean, Goldschmidt has really kind of been a revelation, but this guy's a former MVP, and they were hoping that they could bring him in to the Yankee environment, and he could kind of recapture some of that past. And I think that's what he's done here early on for sure. He's been a great offensive player for them right now. And Ben Rice, I know people keep talking about how he had a great spring. I didn't think people thought he had this great of a spring,
but
that he was going to turn into this type of power bat for them. So
Nine home runs so far in the season from Ben Rice.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I mean, that kind of stuff, you know, they still got to get Bellinger going, obviously. They'd like to see Volpe be a little bit more of an offensive force. You know, he's got the speed on the base pass. They were doing some of that stuff today with hit and runs. So you'd like to get that part involved, too. So I think the Yankees lineup, for as great as they are statistically, as you mentioned, you know, leading a number of categories offensively and certainly at the top at OPS. Again, the big driving force on that is just kind of the supernatural season that Aaron Judge is having. They have a couple other guys that are doing well, like we mentioned, with Ben Rice and Paul Goldschmidt, but that's still a lineup that needs to get longer. And it has the potential with that. I mean, Austin Wells is another guy that we didn't mention, you know, that can be a big offensive bat for them. So I think that lineup can still get longer and still get more dangerous despite the numbers they've put up. And I think it's tough to judge this weekend in Sacramento with the heat and the wind. That place just looks crazy,
yeah.
You know, to play baseball in, certainly at the major league level. So, but they'll take it. I mean, they put up some crazy video game numbers while they were out there. And that's good as a good confidence booster going into a building in Seattle that is not offense friendly, as we know.
The Yankees are going to have a day off on Thursday. The way the rotation would line up, technically, if you kept everybody in their slots, it would be Rodon Friday. They have an opening on Saturday, which could be Ryan Yarbrough, who just pitched today, or with the day off, you could slide everybody up and say Rodon, Schmidt, and then on Sunday night, you'd have Max Fried going, you know, in a nationally televised game. And the Mets have McGill, Canning, and Peterson, which I think with the way the Mets have been pitching, you would think the Mets would have preferred if it lined up with, you know, Senga getting somebody else, you know, like that in there. But as I look at that, do you anticipate that the Yankees will kind of look at this and say it's the Mets and it's the Subway Series and, hey, we have a day off, we don't want to use that spot starter kind of guy, we're going to go with our big guns and get Fried in there on Sunday night?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not sure how they might decide to go. I mean, Ryan Yarbrough has actually pitched really well for them.
And he was terrific. By the way, in the cruddy, you know, in the wind of Sacramento, he looked really good today.
I mean, he's had two great starts for them. He had a good one in the Bronx, too, I remember, the first time they tried him. So I don't really think the Yankees are averse to that. I think their priority is going to be to protect the guys in the rotation. I mean, especially when you're talking about a guy like Clark Schmidt. Mm-hmm. So I think they're going to still decide on that. So I don't think it being a quote-unquote marquee series is going to necessarily impact them on how they line up their rotation as they think for the longer term. I think they're still going to do what's best for them to protect those guys and work through it that way. I mean, the same goes for the Mets. I mean, the Mets have to be careful with their rotation. You've seen guys they're starting to go deeper into games now. You saw Canning went six today, which was good. You know, what they need to start doing in order to preserve the bullpen, you know, before they burn those guys out. So Senga is a guy they've tried to protect, you know, all along as well. So I think with the off day, they are going to probably take a little thought into see how they want to proceed when they look at their rotation for the week starting tomorrow.
And then finally, just wanted to take a look at something that's happening with the Yankees. I know it's very different than what's happening with the Red Sox, but Ben Rice got into another game in the ninth inning today and at catcher. And seems to be interested in obviously keeping those catching skills available. Could you envision a situation where the Yankees, I don't know, you know, have a position player squeeze and decide to go with Rice as their backup catcher? Or would that just be way too much pressure on Wells and the luxury is to have Rice there as that third catcher?
I mean, I think it's a good luxury to have. I mean, we saw that come up with them, Lori, at a game I covered last week when they basically ran out of players. I think it was last Sunday.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And they really got stuck in a pinch-hitting situation where they had loaded the bases late and against the Rays, and they were kind of stuck, and they had to hit Escarra with the bases loaded, who wound up hitting into a double play, and then didn't wind up pinch hitting for Reyes, I think, that was up after him. So they got kind of stuck because they had already had flipped the catcher, and they had to make a swap for two spots. That's when they had to use Escarra at third base.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I think if you do have, you know, that three catcher flexibility. And I think that's why you're seeing Rice getting a little time there, not in big leverage situations, but chances they can at least get him behind, you know, to get some reps back there. I think that gives you some good flexibility in those situations. Anytime you can have another guy that can catch for you as a third catcher, as opposed to sticking somebody you know, as an emergency back there, I think that's definitely an advantage for sure. So that's something I think they're going to file away and could be useful for them as they try to, you know, keep their roster as flexible as possible.
Speaking of roster flexibility, then, I know this is not the team you cover, but of course it is in the Yankees division. It's the Red Sox. And
right.
Have you, I'm sure you've noticed, but what do you make of what's going on with Boston and that they now find themselves, you know, in this controversy where the owner is flying across the country to have a conversation with their star player, Rafael Devers, and it's playing out in public that he does not want to switch and become a first baseman. They moved him off of third to be a DH. He feels like they told him to hang up the glove, and now they're fighting in public.
I mean, there is so much wrong, Lori, with that situation right now, and it's such an organization malfunction for it to get to that point. I mean, we're not just talking about another player on the team. We're talking about a $313 million player on the team.
Right.
And one of the best players on the team. And when you get to a point where the owner has to drag himself to Kansas City for a sit down, not the GM, not the team president, the owner of the team has to go out there for a sit down. That's a real problem. And I just think the Red Sox just kind of booted this from the jump.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? You know, I think, you know, when they brought in, you know, when they moved him from third base without really telling him that was going to be the situation or bracing him for that, that's crazy to start. He was obviously stewing about that all spring. Then they finally get past that, and then it becomes a situation where clearly you can see Devers is still angry about it because he just was uncooperative when first base came up, when they had a need there. So they handled it poorly on the team end. But for Devers, you know, you're paid that much amount of money to really be the cornerstone of the franchise and to really be their out front guy and to really be, if not the captain, at least to be one of the guiding forces of the team, and for you to just flat out, you know, refuse to take on a position for the best interest of the team just comes off as extremely selfish and just has to reflect terribly in the clubhouse. So I don't know what the way out is for them. You know, do they get into a position where it becomes intractable and they have to find a way to move him? That I don't know. But I've covered plenty of dysfunction in New York at different times. Certainly the Mets have had their share of it. Even the Yankees have suffered through periods of it as well. And this is right up there. For the Red Sox to have to deal with this player is a real problem.
Yeah, I know it's obviously a very different situation, but I think back on the Mets years ago with Carlos Beltran, and
right.
Beltran was the center fielder and big long-term contract with the Mets and the star player. And it wasn't always rosy with the Mets, but Terry Collins and the communication skills of figuring out how to have those conversations so that Beltran kind of came to the decision that he needed to move off of center to, to right field and make way for Angel Pagan at the time, who was younger and, you know, at that point, a better defensive, you know, that, you know, Beltran's knees were starting to go and he wasn't quite the defensive player he had been, but that it didn't play out in a public mess. And yes, you have a more selfless, I guess, superstar in Carlos Beltran, but you also have a trusted communicator in Terry Collins in how it was handled.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is that I think, Lori, is that you don't usually see players refuse like that. You know, in most cases, guys will make the effort. You know, it may not always work out. It may not look pretty, but guys will do it. they'll say, hey, give me a first baseman's glove, or give me an outfielder's glove, or give me a catcher's mitt. And they'll give it a shot because they know that's what good teammates do. You know, I mean, look at Bryce Harper. I mean, he moved to first base for the Phillies to accommodate that.
Yeah, in fairness, he couldn't throw. I mean, he also moved when he was, like, recovering, you know, and then he stuck there. But I'm just saying that, you know, in that way, in some way, it was also to help him and help him get on the field. But I'm just saying, we've seen position switches and things. And, yeah, I think this is both the player and an issue, but it is also a new GM in Craig Breslow there. And it just seems like they're having problems communicating, which surprises me out of Cora. I would have expected him to handle this better.
I agree with that, too. You know, Cora has always had a much better feel for that stuff. I'm not sure exactly where it went wrong. I mean, is everybody on the level with it? I mean, was this broached with Devers in a better way than Devers has kind of portrayed it? I'm talking about the move from third base. You know, maybe the truth is somewhere more in the middle there, and Devers is just kind of pushing back on it from way back. But it just seemed like the third base thing never really healed.
Right.
And it clearly didn't. And the Red Sox had to... they had to expect this to happen, right?
Right.
I mean, they had to know that Devers was still stewing about it, and they had to know if they went up to him about first base that they were going to basically get laughed at like they were by him. So, I mean, it's just it's crazy. I mean, but the thing, when John Henry was flying out there to Kansas City, that's when I was like, okay, this has now gone nuclear. When you get to that point where the owner who doesn't, you know.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who rarely even feels like going down to the field at Fenway. Decides it's time for him to jump on a plane and go to Kansas City of all places, then you know you've reached a bad place for sure.
Oh yeah, I mean Boston is as rabid a sports town as we are here in New York, and so
sure.
I can only imagine what's going on sports talk radio up there. But on this topic, because if this was here. Yeah, can you imagine if Hal Steinbrenner was getting on a plane to fly in and have a conversation with a player who was refusing a position switch? It boggles the mind. So
I mean, I can just picture like the Red Sox just counting the minutes until the Celtics and Knicks play again, so they can just remove themselves from the public consciousness for another 24 hours, you know, so they can go run and hide. I mean, here in New York, you know, the Mets and Yankees are dying to get the spotlight back whenever that might happen. But the Red Sox were kind of like, I hope the Celtics are playing basketball for as long as possible, because we don't want people paying attention to what's going on with us right now.
Yeah, so. Nothing to see here, folks.
Exactly.
Owner flying across the country.
They were happy to see the Celtics 3-point percentage rise dramatically in game three.
Dave Lennon from Newsday does a great job. You should be following him online and as well as in Newsday. Dave, appreciate the time.
Anytime, Lori. Have a great night.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.